All right, so we're gonna jump in. First off, as we kind of talk about this main thing of just loving other people, I got a chance to love a buddy of mine who was, he was actually a friend of mine back in my senior year of high school. I worked at Big Five Sporting Goods with him. His cousin had died, and that was my age, and so that kind of drew us together a whole lot. And then his dad died, and so he came to Remedy a few times. Anyway, he had a Christian upbringing, but his parents kind of at a junior high age told him, you could go to church if you want to, or you could stay home. He's like, I'll stay home. So that was kind of where he was at throughout his adolescence, teenage years, and young adult years. But I got to hang out with him. He texted me, he messaged me on Facebook and said, hey, I'm looking for a men's group. Do you know any? And, you know, he's like, hey, remember I introduced you to hummus? I'm like, yes, hummus. So it was funny because he remembers me particularly liking hummus because I like saying the word hummus. But that's just my personality a little bit. So anyway, I said, hey, let's go to my church and I could introduce you to some guys that meet up regularly. So we went to church outside of his comfort zone. He's not used to going to church. He's okay with it, but has a lot of different defenses up on things. But he enjoyed it, introduced some guys, and then we're going to go on Thursday morning. The bunch of guys meet super early in the morning, so that's cool. But right afterward, I said, hey, you want to get some lunch? And he said, oh, yeah, I know this great place in Elk Grove. So we go, and it's called Old Town Pizza. In Tap House. And so he went, yeah, it's awesome. So we went there and, you know, I've never been there. So I'm like, hey, cool. And so he orders a beer and gets pizza. He's like, you want something? I'm like, sure. So I'm going, and then he orders another beer. And then he, you know, starts telling me about some of his recent problems and everything. And I'm just figuring out like, oh, you know, he really likes to drink alcohol. And so I was thinking through, you know, kind of organically just everything we've been talking about the last couple weeks, and so I just wanted to figure out how to love him best during this time. Obviously, we're going to connect with other guys. He wants to date a Christian girl, so he wants to kind of get back into his faith. And so I'm just trying to figure out the best way to love him. And everything like that. So anyway, I don't know if going back to the Tap House with him is the best for him. I don't know if that's loving him the best, since that has been a struggle for him in the past. So I don't know if that would be helpful for him if I went with him and did that. So anyway, I'm kind of navigating this issues myself with my friends. So with that, let's go to the first side, Michael, and actually the second one. Can you see? So the main thing, it's the third round, third and final round.
We can't see.
Oh, okay.
Just move back a little bit. There you go.
Go to the next slide. So question for you guys. What is our main thing as Christians? What would you say our main thing is? So turn to someone next to you, a friend, say, hey, friend. And it could be three people, two people. So point at them, and in about 30 seconds, tell them, hey, this is my main thing right now. Like the most important, passionate thing you have in your life. 20, 30 seconds. Point to a person, okay? In 30 seconds or 20, tell them what's your main thing and then answer it. The person with shortest hair goes first. Ready? Go.
Yeah.
All right, next person can go. Next person can go. All right, if you haven't gone, it's your turn to go. Ready, go. Huh? Some people have groups of three.
John Bunyan?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's right. I always come to John Bunyan.
Really?
Yeah. But
did you guys all go?
Yeah.
We went fast.
Sweet.
We were the first ones.
Oh my goodness, it's such a race. All right, so next slide, Michael. So, there are often times that we do obsess with insignificant things, am I right?
That's very
so sometimes we take the time to do a lot of stuff that doesn't really matter, right, Amy? And so there's often times that we spend absorbent amount of times doing things that really don't matter eternally, that are fun, that are cool, sleeping, eating. Again, those are important. But there's things that we do that we obsess with that are super important. And so all this talk about essentials, non-essentials, hopefully it's having you guys start thinking about what's our main thing. You know, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. The second thing is to keep the second thing second, meaning secondary issues, don't major on those, minor on those. Don't take all those secondary issues and make a huge deal about it, because then we lose sight of the main thing, why we're here on this earth. And so with that, go ahead and go to the next one. When we get hung up on non-essentials, do the essentials have opportunity to make a significant appearance? And I would submit they don't. Again, it's not a matter of, hey, let's never talk about it. Let's just brush things under a rug. That could lead to festering and bitterness. Let's discuss things, but we could agree to disagree on things, but still not be disagreeable about them. And so that's one of the big things about love. So for sake of review, let's kind of look at what we've gone over in terms of how to look at biblical things and non-essential issues. So first one, biblical, kind of the way we defined it was it's clearly and unmistakably revealed or mandated in scriptures, keeping with the New Testament. And if anyone wants these notes or my slides, just text me or email me and I could get them to you. So things that are pretty clear in the Bible, okay? Old Testament, New Testament affirms what that commanded or prohibited. We're pretty sure, yep, the Bible teaches that. Okay, next thing, these are kind of going into more non-essential issues, things that are neutral, that are kind of gray areas that all Christians all over the world tend to have varying opinions on. Oftentimes they're cultural, which are beliefs, values, practices that are part of a shared community. Okay, it's just like, hey, us, they do that thing different, but us here, we do things like this, okay? So that's a cultural way of dividing up non-essentials. The next thing is traditional beliefs, values, practices that come from past convictions. And then personal are practices that result of, I have a personal opinion, I have a personal conviction about that. And oftentimes that does stem from traditional beliefs or cultural values. But they become very personal and you've kind of adopted them and you're like, hey. And so, you know, you guys remember we went over all these issues here. Some were biblical. Most of them were neutral issues that you're going to have varying degrees of. And it was just a way to break them down, to categorize them, to understand a little bit better. As we interact with our friends about these things, we could be very heated, passionate, angry, sad, whatever about certain subjects. But are we still doing the main thing of loving others, as the Great Commandment tells us? Super important, because that works itself out in everyday life. And remember, the unbelieving world, those people who don't know anything about God, they're watching us. how we interact with one another. They're saying, hey, do I want to belong with this people? And if we're not loving each other, they're not going to want to be a part of it. No glory goes to God in that. And so these are some things. So go to the next slide. So fill in the blank. Oh, wait, go to the back one. Oh, I might have skipped it. Go two forward. Never mind. I think I skipped one. Go back. So the big deal is, you know, we're accepting people. We're welcoming people. We're not arguing with people. It's not really a loving thing to argue. Again, you could disagree with someone. You could have varying opinions, but you could talk about it as adults. We're not sixth graders trying to figure out whose dad is stronger and arguing about these kind of things. We're adults. We've gone to school. We have opinions. You know, let's talk about these things. And if you're not ready to talk about it with someone, then it's okay to wait, close your mouth, study up more on the topic, and then you could offer your two cents about it. You don't have to say something just because you're passionate about it. All right, so let's go on to the next thing.
Is that that looks like a function or something in Excel?
It is. It's a formula. If you put it into your calculator, you win the lottery. All right, so the main thing, let's see what God thinks about this. We've been in Romans chapter 14, a little bit of 15, so now we're going to be in 1 Corinthians. So go ahead and turn there with me in 1 Corinthians. And we're going to kind of bounce around a little bit in order. But first off, just a little background. This is a letter. The book of 1 Corinthians sounds long, sounds weird. It's a letter that Paul wrote to the church, to the church at Corinth. It's in Achaia. It's modern day, I think, Thessaloniki or Greece around there. And Paul is writing to them. There's actually a correspondence that was happening. There's some letters that they wrote to Paul because they had issues with certain things, and he's addressing some of their concerns that they wrote to him. So he's not with them. He has problems that need addressing. But listen to this, you guys. This church is so much like our modern day things. They have problems with division. They have problems with sexual sin. Do you guys know any churches that have had lawsuits against each other? This church did. There is porn. In fact, that was the Greek word. It wasn't pornography. They were looking at pictures. They might have been. But the Greek word porn, fornication, sexual immorality, that's where that word comes from when we get the word porn. They were dealing with a lot of sexual immorality, a lot of fornication, adultery, a lot of incest, a lot of stuff. They had problems with marriage. How many people you know have problems with their marriage? Okay, they were dealing with it too. Idols, worship, spiritual gifts. They had questions about the resurrection. You name it. They had a lot of things going on. So Paul addresses these. So in verse 5, we're going to fast forward. Obviously, we're not going to go through the whole book. Huh? 1 Corinthians chapter 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. And you could turn there. I'm going to put a couple verses on the screen here, and then other verses we're going to read kind of in our Bible here. But again, he goes over a lot of things. I just want to highlight a couple things in chapters 5 through 10 and then give us some more principles as we go on. All right, so church in Corinth, Paul's writing. Let's go to verse 12. Go ahead and put that up on the screen there. He says, it isn't my responsibility to judge outsiders, but certainly is your responsibility to judge those inside the church who are sinning. God will judge those on the outside, but as the scriptures say, you must remove the evil person from among you. All right, so look at me, eyes up, listen up. So there's incest going on, okay? In that culture, it was a guy sleeping with his mother-in-law, which in their culture is the same thing as sleeping with his mother. Huge weird thing. Even in Roman law, you weren't supposed to do that. This was someone in the church. So Paul had addressed it earlier, like, hey, I heard about this. You need to get it out of here. You guys are kind of boasting about how you're not doing anything. It later on gets addressed. They kind of went way over the board, and they kept on punishing the guy, and they wouldn't let him back in the fellowship after he repented. So second letter of Corinthians, he addresses that. So he says, hey, forgive the guy, you know. But this, he's saying, you guys, You need to, I've already passed my judgment on, you need to remove him. He's not repenting, he's not turning, he can't be a part of you. And so I'm just mentioning this because it's a huge warning that some things are super serious and we have to talk about them. We have to address them. And if you're not feeling comfortable about it, talk to a leader and do it. If you guys talk to my wife, Danielle, she was a part of a big church in Kansas doing an internship, and she was basically exposed something huge that was going on that was basically ruined a ministry. And God used her to do amazing things, to expose it, to bring it to light. But if she didn't bring up these things, she kept quiet. She's like, you know what? It's not a big deal. Bigger problems could have happened. And so we have to talk about this stuff. And so obviously people outside the church, we're not going to judge them. It's not surprising that they're living in such a way, but people inside the church, we need to address these things. Again, I talked a lot about how to challenge, how to confront in a sermon I gave about a year ago, and I put it in the Messenger Facebook thing. So click on that link if you guys want to kind of hear more about how to do that. Let's go on to the next thing. Again, super big issue as we deal with this. So in chapter 6, no need to turn there. I'm just going to highlight a couple verses here. Go back to chapter 6. Was there a slide for chapter 6?
Yeah. I think I might
have put it on. Oh, there it is. All right. So verse 1, chapter 6. Paul's still addressing different issues. He says, when one of you has a dispute with another believer, how dare you file a lawsuit and ask a secular court to decide the matter instead of taking it to other believers? A. That A is just there because it's a footnote. Don't worry about that. A exclamation point. So obviously, we're not going to go over all this, but as Lecrae says, a Christian rap artist, he says it's like a slap in the face to the God who gives grace. When we can't figure out our own problems and you say, you know what, I really want to get this believer, you know, I'm super mad at them because they're doing this, and you take them to a court to get money out of them. Paul addresses this because that was going on. He was really upset about it. Note the exclamation point. So it was a big deal. It wasn't good. Go to the next slide. It was verse 7, but it may not be up there. Oh, there it is. So even to have such lawsuits with one another is a defeat for you. Why not just accept the injustice and leave it at that? So again, we're trying to figure out how to love each other. The main thing is to love God, love others, and make disciples. When we're not loving each other and taking people to court, this is like way out of bounds. He says, why not let yourselves be cheated even? Verse 8, instead, you yourselves are the ones who do wrong and cheat even your fellow believers. So he says, you know what? Lose that right. Suffer. In Guinea-Bissau in Africa, they had a phrase. It's kind of like ours. They just say, sufri. You know, suffer. You know, just suffer through it. They would encourage other people, just suffer, you know, just suffer through it because there's a lot of hardship and everything. And sometimes people, no, I want to suffer. You know, this is my thing. And so sometimes we need to turn the other cheek and just let things go so that we don't look bad in front of unbelievers. That's a big deal. All right, so let's fast forward. Verse 8. Go ahead and turn there in your Bible.
6? What chapter?
Chapter 8.
Oh, chapter.
Go to the next slide.
Can I just...
No, thank you. Sorry, we're moving quickly through this. Sorry.
It's okay.
All right, so chapter 8. So this kind of brings us up to speed of what we were talking about the last couple weeks in Romans 14. So food sacrificed to idols. Again, not something that we deal with all the time, right? Right. Unless you go across the street, walk into the Buddhist temple, and you're there with a buddy, and you're like, I know if I eat that, it's not going to hurt me. But you're with a believer and he's a new Christian and they're like, dude, if I eat that, I'm gonna like get cursed. Okay, that's when this starts becoming relevant. We gotta really think about this issue, but there's obvious principles. So go to and check out verse 1. Can someone read that for me?
Yeah, about food sacrificed to idols. We know that we all, the
puffs up, but love builds up.
Awesome. And then verse 2, he goes on to say, anyone who claims to know all the answers doesn't really know very much. But the person who loves God is the one whom God recognizes. So while knowledge makes us feel important, it's love that strengthens the church. So note that word puff up. And actually, I'm going to have you guys puff up this balloon. Everyone gets one. A little...
So do you have a fire Bible?
Yeah.
Because you stopped at the same word I had to go through the... Okay.
Oh, that's your...
Sorry, Dad.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, thank you. I'm really bad at this.
Me too.
Do you guys get one?
Can I have that?
All right, there you go. All right. So everyone, blow up your balloon. Blow it up about the size of your head, and then hold it there.
I have a big head. I might not be able to do it.
You have a big head? Have you seen my head?
Some of you guys are like, dude, I need a machine.
These are not...
You have to stretch it real good and use your lungs, people. There you go.
Is it going to pop?
That would be fun. All right. No. Blow it. Yeah, you could tie it. Just make sure it's the size of your head. All right. So did you guys feel the air going into it?
Yeah.
Pretend that balloon in there is your ego and your pride. Okay? And it just puffs up. Sometimes when we learn, how many of you guys are going to college right now? Some people's head are weird shapes. How many of you guys are going to college? Okay, how many of you guys have been to college? All right. So have you ever met someone who's a little arrogant and prideful and they're like freshmen in college? Okay? They think they know it all right. They're learning tons from great professors. And when they keep on going, their ego kind of, they're reading textbooks, they're writing papers, they're getting all this stuff, they're looking at YouTube videos. There is opportunities where we too, yes, we too, can be prideful. And so the Greek word when it says puffs up is literally puffs up, like, you know? And so it's important that we don't do that because it doesn't build other people up. And I'm going to explain why. So you could deflate it or tie it up or whatever you need to do. All right. Either deflate it or tie it. All right, so let's go back to the context, okay? There's people who they felt like they had superior knowledge, like, hey, I'm very mature, deflate it or tie it. You've got two options. They felt like they had, you know, the knowledge. They were the ones who said, hey, I know this isn't, you know, a real God. An idol's not a real God. The food, it won't do anything to you. Sometimes they had felt like they had knowledge. So they make other people feel bad. They would like judge, despise other people. And so they were just puffed up. And that's not love. Whenever we get too close to just thinking about ourselves, our own opinions, our own standards, a lot of things on this list, if we are super passionate, we make other people feel bad, we're really puffed up and we need to stop and repent and ask for forgiveness, because even though you're right, doesn't mean you have to pound that right into other people. Sometimes we have to give up our rights, like we talked about. And so let's go to verse 7. Verse 7, I'm reading in the New Living Translation. However, not all believers know this. Some are accustomed to thinking of idols as being real. So, when they eat food that has been offered to idols, again this verse 7, they think of it as the worship of real gods, and their weak consciences are violated. In other words, some people are still so accustomed to idols that when they eat sacrificial food, they think of it as having been sacrificed to a god. And since their conscience is weak, it is defiled. It's corrupted. So in their mind, remember the context, these people, a lot of them were pagans, and they used to go to temples and places, and you have Bacchus there and Pan there, and you have these rituals, and they partake, and they eat, and they were you know, in a very polydemonistic culture, polytheistic, many gods, polydemonistic, many demons. Sometimes they didn't know how to differentiate. Sometimes they sacrificed food to these gods to keep away from the bad spirits, and they were all confused. And so some people were accustomed to this, and they didn't want to touch it. They were actually tempted to go back into it. So he said, that's why he's addressing this, because it was a problem. He said, dude, don't cause other people to stumble. Don't lead them into temptation by just saying, oh, it's not a big deal. That, for them, it's a big deal. They're violating their conscience. It's a big deal. Check out verse 9. Be careful, however, that the exercise of your rights does not become a stumbling block to the weak. In other words, you must be careful so that your freedom doesn't cause others with weaker conscience to stumble. Okay? Again, the weaker conscience, those who are like, no, I can't do this, I can never do that, like my friend in Kenya who ate pork, right? Or who didn't want to eat pork. I would have been wrong of tempting her to eat pork, because me, as maybe the stronger, more mature, saying that pork can't hurt you, okay? It's not unclean, okay? Jesus said it. All foods are good. If it goes into you, it doesn't have any demons. It's good as long as it's cooked right. But for her, if I really helped her violate her conscience just so I could prove my rightness, that's wrong. We can't be doing stuff like that. We're going to have a chance to kind of go over what that looks like in these other issues as well. So verse 19. Is that a slide there, Michael?
I see Corinthians chapter
8,
verse
19. Oh, wait, never mind. Chapter 9, verse 19. Cool. All right, so in chapter 9, go to chapter 9 and verse 19. Can someone read that? 9:19.
Though I am free and belong to no man, I make myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible.
Awesome. So Paul, he says he's free. He's not a slave to any man. This whole chapter, chapter 9, is about him giving up his rights. He's an apostle. He could get paid for preaching. He's given up a lot of different rights, even though he can take it. But what he's trying to teach them is, hey, even though I'm a free man, I have no master, I become a slave to all people to bring many to Christ. When I was with the Jews, I lived like a Jew to bring the Jews to Christ. With those who are Gentiles or who didn't follow the Jewish law, I didn't do that. I did this so I could bring to Christ those who are under the law. Verse 21, when I am with the Gentiles who do not follow the Jewish law, I too live apart from that law so I could bring them to Christ. But I do not ignore the law of God, I obey the law of Christ. In other words, when he was with Jewish people who were really concerned about their diet and other kosher laws, he you know, wasn't trying to have his superior knowledge and puff up and tell them they were doing wrong. He was a slave to them. He submitted under them, said, I'm giving up my rights. I know that I don't have to eat that, or I'm not prohibited from eating that. But when I'm hanging out with those kind of people, I'm going to do it or I'm not going to do it. I'm going to accommodate them. It's thinking selflessly, not selfishly, because that could bring up arguments. Verse 22, when I'm with those who are weak, I share their weakness. Or to the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I become all things to all people so that by all possible means I might save some. You guys have probably heard that before. Paul, he's a missionary to everyone, to the weak. And sometimes we're like, what does he mean weak? Now we know the context, okay? To the weak, he became weak. To win the weak. Why? Why would he want to win the weak? Well, because if he came with superior knowledge and this mature believer and didn't give up any of his rights and said, no, that's fine, you could eat that. No, that's cool, you don't have to not do that. You know, all these things, that would lead them into temptation. He didn't want to do that. And so picture yourself as a missionary, okay? You're going in, you got to adapt to the culture a little bit. And so I've given you guys some principles here with strategy and whatnot. But the first one, cultural adaptation. Again, picture yourself, you're with a group of foreign people, you got to learn a language, got to start speaking like a little baby, and you got to go in there. You got to come humble. You're a guest in their country, okay? Let's say you're going into Azerbaijan, okay? Azerbaijan is in kind of the Caucasus Mountains, kind of by Armenia and Russia, and it's a place that probably none of us have ever been to. Different culture, different foods, different way of life. If they filled out this thing, it'd be a lot different than us probably, right? And so you're going there, you're trying to adapt. And here's the thing. I had experience adapting to a culture. And what I try to do was adapt as much as I could to embrace and adapt to everything that they did. I wanted to be just like them in all ways, except for, you know, I wasn't going to violate my conscience. I wasn't going to do things that were clearly biblical and against the word of God. But I was going to be like a kind of like a chameleon. Although chameleons just change color and adapt to protect themselves, you're going in, it's a higher calling than just self-protection. You're adjusting, you're embracing, you're adapting. You got biblical essentials on your side, the gospel witness, you're not going to give up those, you're not going to give up your conscience. Okay, you're going to adapt. Strategy, like Paul did, as we could see here, you find common ground with them, you avoid arrogant attitudes, you accept others, you're sensitive to their needs, to their concerns, and you're ready to evangelize in any and all different ways, okay? Strategizing in that way, because if he didn't, it would be a problem. Again, verse 22, let's read it. When I'm weak with those who are weak, I share their weakness, for I want to bring the weak to Christ. Yes, I try to find common ground with everyone, doing everything I can to save some. Verse 23, I do everything to spread the good news and share in its blessings. Okay? He really wants to adapt, to find common ground, to be near them. We don't have to always be right about everything. We could say, you know what? I know what's right, but for them, it's no bueno. They really don't want to do that. You know, they're really against watching that type of movie. I'm not going to be like, dude, it's PG-13. It's not that bad. And they're like, I can't. I'm a G guy, you know? And you're like, all right, dude, let's watch VeggieTales. I'm totally down, you know? Instead of being like, no, we have to watch this because I rented it, Redbox, it's $1.60. Like, come on, dude, like, you're putting me, you know? So we adapt to the weaker, okay? Is that helpful, you guys, strategy? All right, so let's look. Absolutely. Super important. Uber important. All right, next slide. So chapter 10, before we kind of jump into a couple verses and then go on to some other items, just a quick definition of pride. We already kind of puffed up our egos in the balloon. Now you don't have any more pride. It's all in that balloon. Just don't pop it. It'll get in the air. So can someone read this definition? Good. So John Piper, awesome book, Future Grace. If you don't own the book, borrow it, steal it, buy it. No, don't steal it. Come on, people. It's an awesome book. It addresses just having faith in God's future grace, and it'll destroy sin in many different areas. Anyway, I thought this was fairly helpful. Pride has a lot of different manifestations and a lot of different things. But one way to think about it, it's you're turning away from God specifically to be satisfied with your self-interest. And so chapter 10 goes into a lot about what you're allowed to do, but it's not helpful. You know, I'm allowed to do anything, but it's not beneficial to these people. So do we have a verse for chapter 10, Michael? Go to the next one. Next one. I guess I didn't. Go back to the quote. All right, check out verse 23, people. Chapter 10, verse 23. You say I am allowed to do anything, okay? But not everything is good for you. You say I'm allowed to do anything, but not everything is beneficial. Don't be concerned for your own good, but for the good of others. So in chapter 10, he's giving them lessons with idolatry. Just like the people in the Old Testament, the Israelites, they were falling back in and again to worshiping other gods, not the God who freed them from Egypt, but gods of the nations around them. And God warned them. He sent, he had Moses, and they weren't listening. And he's kind of saying, let's learn from their ruin. Let's learn from those who were punished and destroyed. Let's learn from them. And he kind of brings this up to speed with say, hey, because he kind of puts it in quotes. Do you see that? I'm allowed to do anything. Everything's permissible. But he says, but not everything is beneficial. That's an important principle for us as we're navigating this. Because, yeah, you could do it. Like, we have so much freedom and liberality in Christ. We have a lot of freedom. We're under this. We love God. We love others. We have a lot of freedom. And a lot of people have a lot of standards and opinions. But even though you can do something, like you're like, my conscience is clear, the Bible doesn't prohibit it, I'm good. Even though you can do something, doesn't mean it's helpful or beneficial or building others up. I'm allowed to do everything, but not everything is beneficial. Verse 24, don't be concerned for your own good, but for the good of others. Verse 25, can someone read that? And verse 26, 25, 26. Don't be shy.
Anything sold in the meat market without raising questions of conscience, for the earth is the Lord's and everything in it.
Yeah, so he goes right to the heart of the issue. Hey, go to the market, you could buy anything you want. The earth is the Lord's, everything in it. It's all God's. Don't worry about it. Because meat sacrificed to idols ended up in the market and you can distinguish. It was cheaper. Okay? But, again, it was a super big deal for those Christians there because it was a temptation for some. Others, it wasn't. And there was a lot of problems because they ate together. Okay? It was a big deal. And so, here's a good principle. Go to that next slide. No, the one before, maybe the one before this. There. Better to avoid unhelpful actions than assert your freedom. I think that's pretty helpful. Better to avoid unhelpful actions than assert your freedom. Again, remember the story I told you guys last week? I'm in the dorm. I'm in London. A guy from the United Arab Emirates. He's a Muslim. I walk up to his room. We're having conversations, theological conversations. And I decide, I'm going to go up there with a beer. I know he's not allowed to drink. But, you know, I have freedom. He could have freedom, too, if he's in Christ. It's all good. Bam. It's better to avoid that. Again, he wasn't a Christian. But the same rule applies, I believe. I didn't have to assert my freedom on him. That was wrong. That was sinful, I believe. Next one. If you know something is a problem, then you can deal with it. But don't go looking for problems. Some people are expert at creating crisis and drama and pointing out the faults of others. Again, you're always looking for problems. He said that. His theology is probably a little wacky, you know. Or, oh, did you overhear them? I think they're sin, you know, and you're always trying to look for stuff. Sometimes we just got to chillax a little bit and not go out looking for all the problems of others. It's probably best just to not think of yourself at all sometimes. I'm actually going to pass this out and then we're going to finish up with some principles and we're going to go in a small group. So can you help me pass these out? No, it's all right here.
Should I
take one,
pass it down?
Yeah, take one, pass it down. So as those are being passed, let's look at the first three. Okay, this sheet, it's proud people versus broken people. If you don't kind of like the terminology of broken, like I don't want to be broken, just take a look at that verse up there. It's just, you know what, you're at the end of your rope or you really acknowledge who you are in humility before you and God. And you're like, you know what, I'm broken. I know who I am. I'm humble. So the first three, let's take a look. Proud people, top left, focus on the failures of others. Don't be like that. Instead, go to the right side, that top bullet point. Broken people are overwhelmed with a sense of their own spiritual need. And as you go down this list, you start saying, man, I'm really not doing well in some things. Second one, have a critical fault-finding spirit. Look at everyone else's fault with a microscope, but my own with a telescope. The next one, you're compassionate, forgive, because you know how much you've been forgiven. Next one, self-righteous. They look down on others. I'm the best. I look good. I'm doing good with God. I'm all good. The next one, I esteem others as better than myself. Okay? And then flip it to the back. This is for you to keep. Put it up on your mirror. Keep it in your car. Look at it every day. Try to be what you need to be. Top one, our self-conscious. Those are prideful people, self-exalting people. We should be not really concerned with ourselves at all. Doesn't mean you don't shower or eat. Doesn't mean you don't go to school and don't whatever. It's about, hey, you know what? I'm really thinking of others when I go to Remedy. I'm not thinking of myself. I want to learn about them. I want to help them. I want to pray for them. I'm not just going to get my own needs met. It's not bad to learn. It's not bad to get prayed for, encouraged, and built up. But let's start having a more selfless attitude. So put that away. That's yours to keep. And check out verse 32. Chapter 10, verse 32. We'll end with this and we'll look at some principles that John MacArthur is giving us. Thanks, John. Okay, chapter 10, verse 32. Can someone read 32 and 33? Awesome. Thanks, Adam. So again, don't give offense to Jews or Gentiles, meaning don't give offense to people who really want to follow the law, and don't give offense to people who don't know about the law, but vice versa, because there's weak and strong Christians in both camps. For us, we don't have to always deal with the Jew and Gentile dichotomy like they were doing, just because we don't know a whole lot of people who are really trying to follow the Jewish law and be circumcised and everything. But when you start looking at all the cultural, traditional, personal, neutral gray areas, it becomes a big deal. Again, I don't just do what is best for me. I do what is best for others so that many may be saved. You guys, we're a gospel witness. We want others to know who God is. So let's finish with these four principles. You could write them down, take a picture of it. I could text it to you later. Go to the next slide, Mike. All right, so number one, we got edification over gratification. Other words, selflessly encourage people rather than selfishly indulge in your own stuff. Again, hey, they want to watch VeggieTales. I don't really want to watch it, but you know what? They can't watch PG-13, got this red box. Instead of saying, dude, it's not bad. It's not that you're trying to put in your freedom. Don't do that. Number two, it is what it is. Others over self. That's our principle to live by. Three, liberty over legalism. Mature freedom rather than excessive standards. Again, not bad to have standards, not bad to have convictions, not bad to have a sensitive conscience and you really want to please God. People who are weak and strong, again, we all want to please God, but please love your brothers and sisters. Help them out. You don't always have to be the one who wins. Number four, condescension over condemnation. Go down to their level sometimes. Not that you're sinning against God or you're doing things that you think are wrong. Don't violate your conscience in that way. But you're condescending. You're going down. Descent, condescend, go down to their level. And you're doing that over condemning other people. Again, it's about love, the golden rule. All right, so I texted questions to you.
Yes, you did.
And to Father, and to, are you on the phone? Cool, can I talk to her?
I think it was an accidental call.
Oh man, I can't talk to butt calls. Did I just say that? All right, so we're going to break it down this way. So we're going to do three different groups, three different groups. 1, 2, 3. Those are the leaders. Myself, Nancy, and Randall. Okay, so I'm going to call you out, and you're going to go wherever your leader goes. Just follow your leader, okay? 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. She gave me a peace sign. That was cool. Michael, 1, 2, 3. 1, Nico is 2. All right. Spread out. Dad, you're a small group leader. You're 2.
I'm 2.
I'm 1, you're 2, you're 3.
Okay, 2s.
1's meeting here.
Hey.
What? 2s, 3s go elsewhere. I gave them your numbers. They're going to follow you.
At 8:45?
Yes.